50 years ago next Saturday at Shea Stadium in New York, the Beatles set a record.
Here are the Beatles!
55,600 fans packed the home of the New York Mets to see the Beatles on the first stop of their second U.S. tour. It was the largest crowd in concert history at that time. And as Beatles biographer Bob Spitz writes, it forever changed the relationship between the music business and sports stadiums. Bob Spitz, welcome to Only a Game.
Bill, my pleasure to be here.
Describe for us the scene at Shea Stadium.
Well, it was madness. Nobody had ever seen that many screaming kids assembled in one place. You know, it was before Woodstock, before any of the festivals. In those days, concerts were, you know, roughly 800 to 2,500 people in a theater. Mm-hmm. This was 56,000 screaming kids. You couldn't hear a thing. You couldn't see anything because it was like a war zone. As the Beatles came into Shea Stadium, light bulbs lit it up.
In the concert footage, you can see fans clinging to the netting behind home plate and crying. Sometimes that happened at Mets games, but not very often. It is fair to say, I guess, that Beatlemania was at its peak.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. In fact, the Beatles couldn't hear themselves. It was so loud that night that when they started to sing, they started cutting glances at each other because, you know, there were no monitors in those days. Today, you know, a rock act sings and they can hear either every note coming from a monitor or through headphones. Mm-hmm. In those days, no monitors at all, so they couldn't hear each other. And I know that John and George in particular, it was so loud for them that they didn't even bother singing most of the time.
They also appeared in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens, at the Sam Houston Coliseum in Houston, Metropolitan
right.
Stadium where the Twins used to play. Did it get better? I mean, did people learn anything about how to make the sound quality better, or did it not matter because people were screaming so loud that it was irrelevant?
On this tour through 66, it was all screaming. And that's really what soured the Beatles to performing. It wasn't fun for them anymore. They couldn't hear themselves. They knew they weren't connecting with the kids. It was just an event. The Beatles did play ballparks across the United States through 1966, ending in Candlestick Park in San Francisco, mm-hmm. at which time they decided they would never appear in public as a band again.
All right, I'm going to advise you, Bob, to put your earplugs in for a moment because we're going to listen to just a little more from the concert.
Sure.
I think I heard one of them saying, "I can't hear you."
You know, what's amazing is when you listen to that, Bill, they still did their harmonies. They still hit the notes. That is the power of the Beatles.
You have written that the Shea Stadium show was a major breakthrough for promoters. How did it change this particular concert, the business?
Well, from that day on, promoters had saucers in their eyes. They knew that they could make some money. By the time we hit Woodstock in 1969, the major groups only did big arenas and big stadiums, and it just grew and grew and grew, and it really stemmed from that date that the Beatles did at Shea Stadium.
You know, it strikes me that that concert may have been the beginning of a change in the way sports stadiums are built as well, because now you see stadiums that are built with open ends and stages that can be wheeled out very quickly to change a venue so that it accommodates a soccer game one night and a big rock concert the next.
Sure. My daughter went to see One Direction at the Giants Stadium in New York. And, you know, I said to her, "How many people were there?" And she said, "Well, the place was filled." And I said, "Did they sit on the field?" She said, "Oh, yeah, they had an entire seating down there." You're right about that. They can squeeze in every last person in a stadium. And they absolutely do think of that when they build stadiums these days.
You realize that some of our listeners now are weeping with their heads in their hands saying, "No, no, there is no connection between the Beatles and One Direction."
Yes, but there it is. We've done it to them.
Bob Spitz is the author of The Beatles, The Biography. You can link to a video of that concert at onlyagame.org. Bob, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Bill, my pleasure.